Hello, everybody.
Hello.
My name is Rachel Haxtema. As I've told some of you, I'm from Tacoma, Washington, so not too terribly far away. And I'm really excited to be here this week. The theme that Holden set out for the summer was one that I knew a little about, but not a lot. So I had a lot of fun exploring and kind of investigating and figuring out some things that connected to the stuff that I care most about. So I'm excited to share a little of that with you. So this is the series, the kind of arc of the conversations. They're all, you can come to one or all of them if you want, but the different topics. Today is more of an overview, an introduction, and then we'll focus on economic relationships for tomorrow, and then creation, environment relationships for the session three, and then wonder, play, and rest, and renewal for the session four. So that's more of the Sabbath rest ideas. So if you're interested in coming again, I hope so. But today we're going to go through these topics. So we'll do some introductions. We'll talk a little bit about the biblical witness for Jubilee. We'll talk a little bit about our global realities and context. And then I'm going to do a really like rapid fire brief introduction to some contextual and liberation theologies. And those will come in more in the other sessions, more depth in some of them in the further sessions, and how they kind of give us insights and also help ground action towards Jubilee in our daily life. And then today we're going to spend some time thinking about Holden's vision, values, commitments, and how maybe we've experienced them even in the first couple days of being here, maybe from many years or long-term commitments. And then I'm going to introduce a practice, the spiritual practice of the Ignatian Examen prayer, as an opportunity to consider how that could be useful for you in your practices of checking in with yourself and your community around your commitments and your values. So that's for today. So what I'd like you to do is briefly reflect for yourself maybe on what you know already about the word Jubilee, what it feels like to you when you hear that word, what words, feelings, memories come to mind. And the paper is for a different activity later, but I have more, so feel free to take notes on that if you like. But what I'd like you to do is turn to a neighbor or a group of two or three, share your name, where you're from, if you're comfortable doing so, and then share something about what the word Jubilee means to you, what words or phrases or feelings come up when you hear that, or share something you know about the concept from the Bible, if that's something you already know about. So I invite you to meet each other and reflect on what Jubilee
means. I'm a service chair.
Yes,
I was for Ryan. Yes, I am. She needs me to go home. And I don't know. So I'm going to sit on top of it.
The more generic name of it is sense of happiness and celebration.
Okay, and I thought it was in the cycle of things, I thought it was 50 years.
Yeah. Okay. So
Okay, I thought it was in 7. So, seven times 7 is 49. And then the 50 is 42.
Oh, I guess.
I thought.
And then there was,
and some 7 years say, okay,
odds of that, you have to accomplish these things.
That's right.
Which is kind of not what it's about.
Well, that's right. And so, like it recently, there at sabbatical for our professors.
All right, so who wants to share a word or a phrase from your conversation? Do you want to share a word or a phrase that came up in your history?
Celebration.
Celebration, yeah. Good. That's the first one I thought of, too. Great. Does anybody else have other words or feelings that came up?
The Queen.
The Queen, yes. Yes. The Queen and the monarchy and all the special celebrations there. They've just celebrated.
Yeah. Restoration.
Restoration, yes. Great. Any other ones?
Freedom.
Freedom, yes.
Aspirational.
Yes.
Yeah. Relief.
Yes. Joy and jubilance. Yeah. A couple others? Anything else? Or does this...
Forgiveness of debt?
Yes. Forgiveness of debt, specifically, right?
Where does that come from? Is that biblical too? Yeah.
I think so.
Was there something else? No? Others? Yeah, it's a celebratory word. It's a joyful word. It's used in our common language now in some ways around those topics, but the origins of it is what we're going to spend a little bit of time that you've already heard. Some of you already know some of the Old Testament. Oh, sorry. Origins of the text. So we'll go to that in just a minute, but I think that word just does elicit some feelings for us, and it's fun to kind of express those and think about what that word could feel like or does feel like for us. So I'll do a little bit further introduction. I've studied religion theology, did an MDiv and an MA in social theory and ethics at the Graduate Theological Union, and I teach in Christian ethics from time to time, which I really enjoy. As I said at the introductions, I'm most interested in practical lived applications of theology and ethics. So I kind of moved from the philosophy ethics towards social theory and studying how people are living out what they believe. And that's really where my interest is in what church communities are doing and what we can learn from each other about practical ways to live into our ethics. So that's kind of where I'll end each session, is some stories from our own experiences and stories that I've found where I feel like people are actually living up to that aspirational hope of what Jubilee could feel like and look like for our communities. So I met a couple of you coming in. Geographically, I know we have Alaska, Canada, New York. Where are some of the other distant places people might be coming from?
Indiana.
California. Okay, so we're covering the U.S. and a little bit of Canada. And then professionally, I know there's some people who understand Hebrew scripture in the room and some biblical studies folks. Are there other pastors or theological folks? A few of you, great. Okay, you can check me on my knowledge. And then other teachers, people who work in education, great. Medical, healthcare, great. Cool. Let's see, arts, anybody? Nonprofit, social services, kind of community organizations? What am I, business? What am I missing?
Healthcare,
I said, okay, yeah. Forestry?
Forestry.
I know him. Anybody else want to share where they're coming from or thinking about where Jubilee might intersect with their everyday life?
Law.
Retired.
Law, yes, thank you, and retired, so. All the good things that come in retirement. Great. Well, welcome. I'm really excited that you're here, and I really do hope this is a participatory conversational session. So feel free to jump in if you'd like to. So I'll do a kind of introduction. Some of this comes directly from the Holden's material, so many of you have read it or heard it. Some of you who've been here have probably heard it a lot. But we do receive, kind of from the creation story and the Ten Commandments, this idea of Sabbath, every 7 days to take a rest, right? And then there's other laws throughout the Old Testament, what we call the Old Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures. Further laws suggest these cycles of seven. So So the Sabbath is every 7 days, the sabbatical or Shemitah is every 7 years, and Jubilee the year after seven cycles of 7 years. So these are all covenant practices of rest, release. Shemitah translated means release, and so this year, as we heard last night, is a Shemitah year in the Jewish calendar. And I'm part of the board of Earth Ministry, a statewide environmental nonprofit here in Washington. One of our board members is Jewish, and she's really active. They've created this Shemitah Project Northwest. And so there's some really cool resources that the Jewish community around the Northwest is celebrating and looking into, specifically around the environment in Shemitah. And Deirdre is coming to be a teacher later this summer at Holden. So if you can't come back or if you're not here long term, you can look for those recordings later and hear more from her experience of what Shemitah means and how she's incorporating that in her work in the state of Washington. But it is an exciting year for this kind of convergence of Holden choosing the Jubilee theme and the Shemitah year on the Jewish calendar. And so the specific kind of proclamation of Jubilee partially comes from this text in Leviticus. On the 50th year, you shall proclaim a Jubilee to the land and all its inhabitants. And Jubilee comes from this Hebrew word, yovel. Somebody could probably pronounce better than me, which means ram's horn trumpet. So that's the name of the trumpet that was sounded at the beginning of the year. But I learned that the spelling is also influenced by the Latin term, jubilare, to shout for joy. So kind of the coming together of those two ideas comes together in our term, jubilee. And so for those of us who look to scripture for inspiration, we have this kind of constant theme throughout that God's people are to care for one another in creation. And it comes out really clearly in the ancient Hebrew laws. And so in Genesis, we have this idea that everything belongs to God. In Exodus, we have this clear indication of Yahweh as the God who liberates. And then we have in Deuteronomy, the Sabbath day mandate, the remission of debts, and the liberation of slaves every Sabbath year. So then you can see here some other references. This restoration of land to original families, or rest for the land, are some really interesting topics that we won't go into detail. The aspirational word that I heard comes up, and we'll go to that next. But this idea that it would get returned to families is a little bit, the understandings of what was intended there and why that was true could be complicated around keeping it in the hands of certain people and certain families. But the more aspirational idea that it would return and that nobody would lose their land if they had to sell part of it because they were in debt. So this idea that if your land wasn't producing enough, you could sell a small portion to somebody else, get some resources, and then after 50 years, you could receive your land back, you know, and hopefully restore your family's properties and continue that process, right? So it has this equalizing idea of helping make sure everybody has access to the resources they need, and that even if you have to, you know, in the ancient times, sell yourself as a slave or sell yourself as a servant in order to make things work for your family, that wouldn't be forever, that would be a temporary idea, right? So these aspirational laws were created, but there's actually no evidence that this Jubilee was enacted, which also gives us this sense that it really was aspirational and maybe so aspirational that we're not sure it ever could actually be accomplished. But there's some indications that maybe it was practiced in some ways. But what was interesting that I also found is that it's not unusual in that region, in the larger Near East region, that there were other laws that were somewhat similar in other communities, other lands. I don't know what the right, not nations, but other communities at that time. So it's not a crazy idea because they all shared this idea that this should be a thing, right? That the thing should be returned, that there shouldn't be this lifelong loss, that there should be a way to always have means to produce enough food or however you were producing for your family, right? But what a lot of people believe and agree is that it shows God's intentions for restoring and flourishing. And it seriously continues to inspire people for visions of a just society. So throughout the biblical story, we have these Israelites failing to follow the law. The prophets come and tell them they should return to the law. And then this God's vision and idea of restoration continues as a thread throughout the scriptures. And then moving into the New Testament, we have Jesus right at the beginning of his public ministry in Luke 4:16-22, really announcing Jubilee. Good news to the poor, freedom for the prisoners, set the oppressed free, and announcing the year of the Lord's favor. So that's another phrase that indicates Jubilee for the Hebrew text and Hebrew understanding. And I love this quote that I found, actually. So I don't know if many of you remember several years ago, I think it was in the early 2000s, there was a whole movement around Jubilee and international debt relief. So a lot of conversations happened then about what Jubilee could mean and how we could understand it. And this professor of biblical studies said, Jesus would have seen himself as standing clearly in the progression of the prophetic. When he says, today the scripture has been fulfilled, he's saying not just every 50 years, not just every seventh year, but every now, every today, when you come across injustice, this is where Jubilee is fulfilled. And so that's what kind of prompted me to think about this idea of everyday Jubilee. What ways can we truly attempt this aspirational, hopeful idea of living into an understanding that there could be real justice, real flourishing for all people, that we could participate in that action of Jubilee. So, love for you to think for a moment what kinds of, so we heard all these great words, freedom, forgiveness, restoration, celebration. We thought about this a little bit last night in the service if you were there. What kinds of Jubilee, release, repair, rest, do you long for? So individually, you can take a minute to think about what that would look like for yourself. And then what I'd like you to do, again, in small groups or groups of two, is think about, like, what kinds of things need Jubilee in our communities, right? In our communities, our local communities, and around the world. Like, if we think really big picture, what would Jubilee, what would that beautiful, hopeful, aspirational Jubilee look like if we could enact that? And so that's what those half sheets of paper are for. So you can take some time to chat and think about it. I'd love for you to write it big, 3 to 7 words, and put it on a piece of paper so that we can kind of all glance and see some of the kinds of Jubilee that we're hoping for in the world. Whether that's local, whether that's international, it could be anything. But I think there's a lot of things in our world that could use some Jubilee. So take a minute, reflect for yourself, and then connect with two or three people and make some phrases so that we can all see our context, our global reality context. More markers and paper.
It's just the stuff in the world that you want us to write down.
If you want to write something for yourself that you're longing for, that's totally fine. But I'm thinking a little bit more of the community world stuff that we could share, you know, share in community. And guessing there's resonances between the things.
Is there any way to write a bunch of words, single words, or a statement?
If you do, take more papers, right? Like, so each paper should have an idea. So if you have lots, I can find more paper. Sounds like you're going to need more paper over there. You've got lots of good ones.
I need more paper.
And I can send you those slides too.
I would
send the whole set of slides if you want.
Yeah, I think I would like that.
Sure. I forgot to say that at the beginning, that the resources I'll share with MRK, she'll email them out to people who sign up for them. So beyond the slides, we'll have some food for everyone. Make feel free to take pictures. Want more paper? Feel free. So we're just going to put them here on the fireplace so we can kind of all walk around as we put them out and see them and kind of get a sense of where we're longing for Jubilee. And you can get up and walk around when there's more here and see.
I sat on my table. I'm hatching.
Off the press.
I'm hatching.
Pretty soon there'll be a ring.
Maybe it'll multiply.
Can we do?
Yes, go ahead. Like that's what it's intended to be. Something we can glance at and see what other people are saying. Feel free to do another if you want.
If you can make it that way. It could be a Sabbath, it could be a stressful time.
Yeah, it feels like a Sabbath.
When there is a lot of
some of the
opportunity to come back.
It's adequate, maybe.
Right, yeah. You know, nobody's permanently lost.
I taught my sixth graders to do when they walk around.
Hands behind the back, so they wouldn't touch.
You can't be enslaved for a lot of things, but just kind of trying to further that.
Oh,
look, Brass from Strategic Planning. Yeah.
Did you get any more?
The fireplace is a nice board for it. Well, thank you for sharing those. Feel free to keep looking.
Can we just keep going around?
If you want to. You can add more to it throughout the week.
Until we absorb it.
This is kind of like setting our context for the week, so I'm hoping to post them around. When you come back into this room, you can remind yourself of all the things that are in our global context that need relief and release. If anybody would like to share, you know, something that came up from their group or how thinking about global realities in the framework of Jubilee felt, welcome any comments. Sure.
Yeah, I put a comment about letting go of our colonial privilege as a denomination, because I'm still trying to think of letting go of the imagery of Christ as a white individual and how that's impacted my entire view of my theological hermeneutic, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. And also how we seem to be holding so dearly onto all of our church properties as well. I think that there's a connection there to our colonial heritage and those properties. Yeah,
we'll talk a little bit more about that really explicitly on Thursday, I think. So if we can talk directly. But yeah, I think freedom from our images that can be dangerous, our images that have been colonized images, but also the specifics of property. Yeah.
There's too many issues to fix in a year of Jubilee.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. How does that feel?
Bad.
Yes. Yeah, it's a bit overwhelming, I think, also to kind of put the global realities of so many things that need drastic change, right? Yeah, that can be difficult. Any other reflections.
It's hard to find joy when you look at all those needs. So if joy is tied to Jubilee, there's a contradiction buried in this.
Right. Yeah, the context, what's needed, and the hopeful, aspirational celebration that would come if that happened, right? Like, that's a huge distance, it feels like. So how can we live in this moment, knowing the context is very fraught, very complicated, very difficult, and try to find either moments, insights, opportunities for joy and celebration, even given that? And how can we also be part of that action and move towards the bigger picture things? Because we don't want to get caught up in just celebrating for a year without actually moving us towards those actions, right?
But it's a complicated kind of issue.
Totally.
Well, I think of Russia, okay, as a let people alone or then help people, see? And, you know, then you have to make some kinds of decisions about.
Yes. Yes, our current realities are just so heavy right now. I saw gun violence there. Think about war. It just feels very heavy this year. It did last year with the movements around Black Lives Matter and the murders of so many people that we're publicly aware of. So it's a complicated, really difficult context we find ourselves in. A friend of mine was talking about homelessness recently and just how much worse it's become since he began working on homelessness in the 80s till today. And he said, if you had told me 40 years ago it would be worse and there'd be so many more people from so many different reasons and realities coming to homelessness, I would not have believed you. Mm-hmm. So I wanted us to honor and recognize that we live in a really complicated, difficult place. And we will talk a little bit more about some of those pieces throughout the week, but it's not easy to look at them all and to realize where we're at. So let's hope that we can receive some insights and move towards potentials for liberation. So if we do see that Jubilee shows us God's intentions for liberation from oppression, we have these texts that speak really specifically to slavery and debt and restoration of land. But today, oppressions take many of the forms we've just mentioned that we put on the pieces of paper. And for many of us who believe that we are created in God's image, that we are called to care for our neighbor, love one another, that those are core understandings of who we are and what we should be about, any form of oppression is unacceptable. And also, we know that these forms of oppression are all interconnected, right? So we need to take seriously individuality, the individual particular nature of certain types of oppression and certain types of violence and realities, but we also need to consider how those things are connected and how we can learn from one another and from different folks who've experienced the difficulties of being in oppressed situations. And I believe that these liberation and contextual theologies that come from those particular experiences of oppression and difficulty, deep challenge throughout the world, the theologies that come from those places actually have so much to offer us in terms of insights about how we could live in a different way, how we could live towards a Jubilee way of thinking and Jubilee values. So I'm going to kind of quickly take us as a brief introduction. Many of you probably are familiar with some of these theological strands and traditions. And if you're not, we can talk more about them and go a little bit more in depth this week. And as I was mentioning, Emma Kate will have sign-up sheets later this week throughout the sessions, and you can sign up to get additional resources. So I'll come up with a resource list for additional reading. Some of the resources I'll share here in the slides that you can receive later. So feel free to take notes, but don't feel in a rush or anything.
I did put the sign-up sheet, it's on a blue piece of paper, on the clipboard on the fire ring, so that will just kind of live in this room. You can put your name and your email, and then we'll get you those resources.
Yeah, so feel free to do that, and I'll share some of the resources I'm using for this and some additional reading possibilities, too. So liberation theology is this strand of theology that came out of Latin America, particularly in the 60s and 70s. But it's specifically theology applied to the core concerns of marginalized communities in need of social, political, economic equality, and justice. And so what happened is people who were inspired to read the Bible in this way formed base communities these small communities. This is a reaction a lot to the clericalism and the elitism in specifically the Roman Catholic Church in Latin America at that time. And to say that actually everybody can read the Bible and it should be read by poor to be interpreted properly about what really it could be about for us. And so these communities came together to read the Bible together, to try to understand it for themselves and what it meant for their particular context. But they also were very involved in activism and taking care of one another physically as well. And so this idea that comes out of liberation theology is this preferential option for the poor, which you can find throughout the entire Old Testament and the entire New Testament. There's a lot of texts about how we are to be in relationship with poor people. And so they took seriously those texts and said, if this is what the text says, we should be about this. So we should talk about this and be about this. And so two of the primary theologians were Gustavo Gutierrez and Leonardo Boff. And so when we talk about economics tomorrow, we'll go a little bit more in depth with liberation theology ideas and some of the, some messages that come from there. At about the same time in the United States, black liberation theology was emerging. Specifically, James Cone was doing a lot of writing. And what he said was an interpretation of Christian gospel from the experience and perspectives and lives of people who are at the bottom in society, the lowest economic and racial groups, is where we need to start. So very similar to what came out of Latin America at about the same time, this recognition that we have to take seriously the perspectives and experiences of those who've been oppressed dramatically. So the theological task is to analyze the nature of the gospel of Jesus in light of oppressed blacks so that they will see the gospel as inseparable from their humiliated condition and bestowing on them the necessary power to break the chains of oppression. And that was James Cone. And so black liberation theology emerges right around the same time and develops and continues to develop today. Womanism flows further from that, comes later in our technical timeline of where it emerged and it became common understanding. But this centers the experience and perspectives of black women. Alice Walker wrote, "A womanist is to feminist as purple is to lavender." So following the feminist movements of the 60s and 70s, black women said, you know, white feminism doesn't work for us. It's not taking seriously our concerns and our lived realities that are very intersectional, where race and gender come together to make things even more difficult for us in particular. So we really need to address all of these forms of oppression and see that beyond the black liberation theology that's needed that mostly came from black male theologians, we need to take seriously the experiences of black women, center their experiences and understand what they've been dealing with. And so some of the writers in the womanist realm are Dolores Williams, Katie Cannon, Renita Weems, and Emily Towns. And so really important stuff, and when we talk about Sabbath and rest, we'll go a little bit further into some womanist theologies. And ecofeminism was a different approach to intersectional connections between the feminism that had already emerged and the ecological consciousness that was emerging. And people made the connections between the domination of women and the domination of nature. And so this aims to see the world, to liberate all of these interconnected dominations by better understanding their origins and enforcement. So when I took a class, was lucky enough to take a class from Rosemary Redford Reuther at GTU, and just thinking through the dualisms that are present in our Western, mostly in our Western culture around civilization and wilderness, male and female, I'm trying to think now of all of them, but people in the earth, right? So if you think about the ways that colonialism said the earth is ours to take and to use, the ways that indigenous people were treated, the way that women have been treated throughout time, that there's this constant theme of domination and oppression and use and, you know, extraction that can be connected. And so if we can take that seriously, we can see new ways of unfolding justice too, right? Like if we take seriously the ways that that has been enforced and has been implemented, we can actually overturn that in new ways when we understand where that comes from. And so Rosemary Redford Reuther is a primary kind of thinker in this area. Ivona Guevara comes from South America and has some really important work on ecofeminism as well. And queer theology, which is, you know, has always been real, but is more publicly available to us and more being written about recently. Gender variance and queer desire have always been present in human history, including in our faith traditions and sacred texts. And so people who take seriously queer theology purposefully oppose and the fixed social and cultural norms regarding gender and sexuality. And really, you know, like all of these contextual theologies, valuing marginalized voices and really explicitly looking for voices from the LGBTQI plus community. And so some of the thinkers here are Marcella Altas-Reed, Patrick Cheng, and Yvette Flender. And we'll talk a little bit more about the intersection of queer theology and eco-theology as well on Thursday. So that's like rapid fire brief intros to some of where I found inspiration, where I found excitement for seeing theology and scripture in new ways comes from these folks and from these writers because of their lived experiences. They've seen things differently than I grew up with, differently than I understood it, and have really challenged kind of the accepted norms that sometimes we experience in our communities, and especially in our Christian communities. So we'll take that as our background and go a little bit into today. I wanted to talk specifically about Holden and this place, and this place that many of us have come back to over and over, some of us for the first time here because we've heard about it from others. But Holden has some exciting vision and values. This is what's currently listed as vision and values. And so I bolded some things that I think are important. But I do think that Holden has committed to a way of living that is different from my everyday life and the rest of the world, and allows for practicing Jubilee values in some ways that otherwise I probably would never have tried or experienced, right? And so I pulled out these three to match my three themes that I'm going to talk about this week. So work here at Holden, as you've already been invited to join in if you're a guest to the Waitry program, like to run this community, we all learn it takes a lot of people and a lot of work, and it feels like something we can all do together here, right? In a way that's different sometimes from our world outside. So work, everybody participating, doing things together, understanding the responsibility we all take to take care of a place. And then earth, garbology, mindful consumption. If you've ever done a garbology shift, you've sorted garbage, or you know just about how much care has to be taken with the resources that are used here, right? And so it can be a way to really be very mindful about consumption and resources. And then play and hilarity. I don't know how many of you have experienced any of these things. The 4th of July parade is the one that I first thought of. Has anybody been here for 4th of July? A couple people? That was my first introduction to Holden, was arriving on the bus as part of the 4th of July parade many years ago, and I just was like, what is this place? This is totally crazy, but super fun. They're like, you're going to be part of the parade. It's less than a city block long. We're going to be the first float. And then there were all kinds of costumes. And the bookstore person had created little Shriner cars out of cardboard boxes and hats, and was running around in little formations with her team. And the housekeeping staff was spraying everybody with water. And so just a lot of fun, right? And I'm hoping that you all will share some examples of hilarity that you've experienced as well. So, maybe you've experienced garbology or some hilarity, but I'm wondering if you'll connect with the people you're around and share something, either your brief introduction yesterday and today about what this community is about and how that, what stood out to you, or something that hit you that was different from other places you've been, or if you've been here many times, you probably have some stories about garbology or hilarity or something else that stands out to you about the ways Holden is trying to do things in a, let's say, a Jubilee way. So I'd love to hear, for you to share with each other, and then if you want to, we can share in a large group as well.
And then the other side.
For you?
You mentioned back to school.
Oh yeah.
That's just
Have you been here for that?
Yeah, hilarious.
Yeah. So say something about what it's like for people who haven't seen it or haven't seen the pictures.
You know, the whole idea about going back to school for the year, you want to be, like, you make sure you have everything, you're there on time, what have you. What was interesting was that the kids were dressed up in costume. Yeah. You actually had the school bus picking up the kids up here on the hill to take them to school. But the funny part about it is that you had staff doing everything possible to prevent the school bus from moving.
So just like a whole like play acting silly thing to make the beginning of school
super. They had traps, you had bodies on the road. I mean, they were doing all sorts of stuff to make sure that, nope, we're not getting these kids to school.
And if you know, the school bus had to go, you know, less than a city block.
It goes up the hill and just comes back. It's really a fun system.
We talked about costumes. I think costumes are key to a lot of the Holden hilarity stories that I have heard. And are there other long-term, do you want to share something, Emmer-Kate, about something you've enjoyed?
Yeah, something that was really meaningful for me that was both hilarious and sweet. This November, we had vaccine clinics for long-term staff, and then once we had our boosters, so people came up on the boat and they gave us our booster shots. And we decided, well, let's celebrate this. So we had a booster ball. And everybody, we dressed up, like fur coats and really long evening gowns, and had this kind of just really lovely moment of celebrating this beautiful thing and like all of the effort it takes to bring healthcare to this place and just how privileged we were in that. And actually that evening, we had a community conversation about our new staff covenant. And it was kind of a daunting thing, but we were all in these like silly outfits and it totally zapped all the tension. So it was like not only hilarious, but also kind of helped us have like honest conversations with each other.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it ties really well into another story about rest and fun and how that can impact us for the final day of our series too. But yeah, I've loved it. I think one of the summers I came up here, there was a theme for the whole summer on hilarity. And so that's why I had heard a lot about it and had heard a lot of stories. Does anybody else have a hilarious story? Go ahead.
It also is a very inclusive kind of thing. And what I think, what you mentioned, one of your slides had fireworks down.
Right.
And on the 4th of July, people, they save
bubble wrap.
Yeah. Do it. But how that started. There's a couple from Seattle who both had CP and they were in wheelchairs all the time, Sharon Jodark. Mm-hmm. And Alan, this one guy, they were coming up on the 4th, so he said, what can we do? So he and his caregiver brought a giant roll of bubble wrap. They rolled it out in the village center, and this is how the bubble wrap started.
Yeah.
And rolled it out, and then he ran his chair. Like fireworks.
Yeah.
And that's how the bubble wrap started.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But then when the minor mediation was going on, and we had this one time when the miners were here, and they got off early and they participated, they got into the parade and everything. when they came to the fireworks thing that they over at, we had all these very strong people with their big boots on going, having a terrific time. All this hilarity stuff that happens and gets locked in, and it welcomes people in. Sometimes jokes can exclude.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But a whole hilarity always welcomes.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and that was my experience, you know, just being brought into something new and being included from the get-go, and I'm really glad that you shared that story about the fireworks, because I've told people about Holden fireworks many times, because of the fire risk, obviously we cannot have fireworks here. Some of you have seen this, but the time I was here, they showed a DVD of fireworks, and we all popped the bubble wrap, and people had flashlights, and oohed and awed over, like, this...
Yeah.
Actually very poorly done video of fireworks. I think it was actually like an old-fashioned VHS recording of fireworks on a TV, and at some point somebody said, I think it's upside down. Everything about it was ridiculous, right? But it was because we were all together and we were making it fun, it was so fun. Super good time for everybody.
You know, in the old days, Pride Week was just amazing when you first came up, you're thinking, oh my God, what is all, everybody's all in costumes. And then we got on the flatbed truck, and then we had pots and pans and spoons, and we were banging all the way down for a block. And so, and there was a gay week, and one time they had a baptism of a couple, and together, and they would go down to the river. And they had the, and it was like, whoa, it was something
like a
else.
A river baptism.
Yes, it was down by the river.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, too. And so I also heard some reflections on work and the participation. Does anybody else want to share something about how participating in the work or participating in garbology has impacted them?
I did garbology after 4th of July.
Okay.
I think we, like, normally you'd end at, you know, 9:30, or so. I think we went till about 10:45. But I enjoyed the conversations, and they can get very deep.
Garbology conversations.
It's interesting. You'd think it would be, you know, smelly or... And it is, but like I think, I just think it's it was a great place for community to work together. But the conversations would often focus on like environmental ethics in one way or another too. Like the or also one time the garbologist here in the mid 90s pointed out to me, you know, this what we're putting into the compost right now would be edible in other countries too. Where we just took a moment to talk about that, because we had some larger stale loaves that still had that were hard, too hard for us to serve in the dining room, and we were chopping them up with shovels. And he made that comment that it would be a feast in another area of the world, right?
They call it panzanella in it. Italy. And then we're just going to make a salad out of it.
So we learn a lot by sorting trash, I think, and something we're not required to do in our everyday life in cities. But one more. And then
remember, we had to sort a lot more of it. One rule, one thing everybody would tell people, never ever put anything in the garbage that you don't want anybody else to read.
So don't put any letters that you don't want garbologists to take note of. That could be a hilarity skit right there.
You could really do something to get them yelled.
Go ahead, you had one more story.
Often staff have been people who have come as J-term people. And I remember a particular young woman who just wanted to do garbo.
Yeah.
And the first time she made dirt was certainly a jubilee. What had been vegetables and paper towels.
Like, was just so excited about the compost.
All of a sudden, there's this big pile of bin of dirt.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you for sharing these stories, and I hope you'll keep sharing them with each other. Ways that we have seen and experienced possibilities for doing things differently, certainly, and hopefully moving us towards jubilee thinking. So today, I wanted to offer you a practice. Many of you might be familiar with the Ignatian Examen prayer. So this comes from St. Ignatius, from the Catholic tradition. The Jesuits have a lot of great resources on this topic if you are unfamiliar. I do have a handout, and I have, I'll send it, you know, with the other resources. If you want to take it today, it has some of this and some other ideas on it. But the Examen prayer is a way to, I mean, the Jesuits and the commitment was to pray this throughout the day or at least one time during the day. But it's a fivefold kind of movement. The first is to become aware of God's presence and God's love, review the day with gratitude, and then pay attention to your emotions as you reflect on your day, specifically thinking about what brings you closer to God or where you've seen or experienced God in the day is the Ignatian kind of traditional way to look at it. I've kind of adapted it here to line up with how we could check in with ourselves. Are we living into the values we want to be living into, right? So whether that for you is being closer to God or more of just kind of a check-in with your own personal ethic and values, I think this could be a potential way to do that. And then what you're supposed to, you know, so where did you feel aligned or energized or connected to God? And then where did you feel distanced or separate from God or separate from your values? And then the next move is to choose one or two of the strongest desires or feelings and bring those to God, bring those to reflection, and consider it. Give thanks for it if it's life-giving, you know, intend to do more of that. And if it's not life-giving, ask for insight and grace for how to change and how to adjust. And then the next move is to look towards the next day, the next week, and ask God, ask Spirit for assistance to move in those directions, right? So this fivefold prayer is something that you could adapt in a lot of different ways, but throughout many, many years of history, many people have found this to be a very helpful way to kind of check in with themselves, check in with their relationship with God. And so I've you know, added some kind of prompts that speak a little bit more to where I'm going with Jubilee values and living into our Jubilee values. But you can also do more specific kind of variations on this. You could really use this specifically to think about your relationships in one focus area. You know, the ones we're going to talk about this week around money, earth and creation, rest. And you could use this as a way to do daily journaling too, right? Like use a journal to prompt to write your responses down to these, jot down your memories, and use that as an opportunity to reflect. Anybody else do bullet journaling? This is a form of journaling that's kind of a way to organize your life and live mindfully, but it's also a way to then have a record of kind of what you were up to, right? And so you can do this with whatever calendar you use, too, to say, like, what did I do today? How did I spend my time? Is that how I want to be living my life? Is this appropriate for where I want to go in the future? And you can use that kind of as a check-in time. You can also use it with a group or a family and think about, are we as a family feeling connected, aligned? Are we feeling distanced or having challenges? So there's lots of resources for Ignatian Examine. My husband and I have found one that we use with our kids at night that's a recorded exam. There's a lot through this app called Pray As You Go. So you can find lots of different types of examines there. And one is a children's examine that asks, you know, like, think about how you spent your day. Was it at school? Was it at home? And then what made you happy today? Where did somebody say something nice to you? Or did you say something nice to somebody else? And so it's a child kind of friendly prayer that we use now every night, and it gives me a moment to do my own reflections internally as we ask the kids to reflect on their day and move towards sleep, right? So lots of possibilities for using the Ignatian Examine. Are there some of you who've had positive experiences using a form of prayer like this? I feel like some people are quite familiar with it, but maybe not. But it is an opportunity, I think, for a daily or weekly or group kind of check-in to see where you're at and how things are going for you. So that's what I have for today. And I do have about a few copies of this. I can certainly make more copies if you really want to look at that right now, the examine prayer practice and how to kind of have those prompts in front of you. But tomorrow we'll move towards some focused conversation on economic relationships. Thank you for coming today, and I'm sticking around.